Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Philanthropreneur Show, hosted by Dr. Victoria Boyd and Pat Landecker, designed to offer tips, strategies, and insights to empower nonprofits and entrepreneurs with sustainable win-win solutions. The Philanthropreneur Show is sponsored by the Philanthropreneur Foundation, building capacity through education, awareness, and resources. We welcome your questions and input. To call in and join the show, please dial 347-945-7404.
Well, welcome. This is Dr. Victoria Boyd and my super co-host, Pat Landecker, and we're here to bring you the first show of 2017. We made it. Good morning, Pat. I'm really excited about the topics we have on today. Your organization version 2017. So what does that really mean to you, Pat?
Well, you know, I'm a big reinventor all my career, and it served me well and it served me not so well. But I definitely believe in reinvention, and I hope that nonprofits understand that they're going to have to take that journey, and they should already be taking that journey. It's very important that you look at the lay of the land, which changes like every 5 seconds nowadays, and make sure that you're adapting to not only your clientele, but to your market share, you know, and understanding what all that means. So I think reinvention allows you the opportunity, Victoria, to kind of see your bigger picture. You don't have to change anything. It might be working well, but it really pays to take a peek, don't you think?
Absolutely. That whole, I call it that assessment, looking at, you know, you stay in a cycle where you have to evaluate and assess whether or not what you're doing is working in order to do and plan for the future. And so you should stay in a cycle almost of continuous improvement. And I think a couple shows ago, it might have been an article I wrote about Reed Zimmerman's book, The Seven Deadly Sins of Nonprofit Leaders. And one of those sayings was, well, we've always done it this way. And that just does not work in this day and age. Too many levels, too many things are changing, as you say, on a daily basis, that you really need to pay attention. Is your organization operationally keeping up with the times? Yes, the cause may still be the same, the needs may still be the same, but how you work as an organization will have to shift if you're going to stay competitive. And yes, you have to be competitive, because there's a lot of nonprofits out there that are doing the same work, and that's fine because there's a lot of need. But you have to be able to rise to the top, or, you know, be the cream of the crop, as they say. And the only way you're going to do that is to be relevant. And I think that's another key word. Are you still relevant?
You know,
to what
Victoria,
you're doing?
I talk a lot about the fact that I come from Colorado, and Colorado is a very giving state. You know, all of us old hippie baby boomers, oh, we love nothing more than that, and that's a good thing. It was a lot different fundraising there, getting visibility there, getting an opportunity to sit on the news desk there, because I just think it's a little bit better embraced. Nevada's kind of coming into all of that, and a lot of organizations are trying to adapt to what, you know, probably our biggest giving dollar comes from the casinos. What do they want? You know, partnerships. You know, the one thing I've seen, though, is a lot of partnerships that are started on the fly. And by that, I mean that the organization has a need, or the giving organization, a corporation, might determine that they want to do something in the giving vein this year, and they just go find there's no real process and different things like that. And I think that nonprofits could really look at that, the biggest mistake that we often make is we don't know who we're asking money from. We don't know that organization. Mm-hmm. We don't know, you know, what they give to. We don't know the history. We just kind of throw it out there, see what sticks. And nonprofits can't play that way anymore. When it comes to marketing and mm-hmm. things like that, they have really got to understand who they are asking for money. And I think, getting back to the point of the corporations, they really don't know they want this, but trust me, this is what they want. They want you to know who you're, you know, getting your money from.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you referred to that, because one of the words, you know, that was thrown around as we developed this show today was intentional, that you put the word out there, intentional. And I think that word brings such power and meaning with it that it's not fly by night, or, you know, off the cuff, or you're sitting next to somebody and just say, oh, yeah, let's work together, you know.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
it is rooted in history, research, and some of the basic elements of what you really need. So that's I'm really excited that that is what we're going to be talking about today, and we're going to break it into three phases: intentional leadership, which is always so important; intentional marketing, because that is where I see a big gap, that they're just not putting all of the pieces together, and they think they have a great plan, but there's so many elements missing. And then intentional programs, which could be on internal, external. There's a lot of different levels of how we could look at that. So I want everybody out there to grab some a paper and pencil, because you'll probably want to take some notes. And we'd also want to hear some of your input on what are some of your plans. We might be able to give you a suggestion here or there. And so we'll call in with your questions at 347-945-7404, and we'll be back on in just a few minutes after this first little commercial.
The Philanthropeneur Foundation. Build your capacity with our educational programs and professional services. Learn how to be a philanthropeneur. Maximize your social impact and maximize your revenue. Visit thephilanthropeneur.com or philanthropeneurfoundation.org to find services, resources, and training to launch, enhance, or improve your business or nonprofit strategy. While there, sign up to receive the Philanthropeneur Journal digital publication.
Okay, I'm back with Pat Landacker, my wonderful co-host, and this is Victoria Boyd. I think we'll kick it off by talking about intentional leadership. And I added that to the conversation because in our board-bound leadership training, we start with the module of leadership, that whole intentional leadership, being a steward leader and things like that. Pat, I know you work with a lot of women and even the youth in building and developing their leadership skills. So as an intentional leader, or that term intentional leadership, what tips or advice might you give to increase your skills?
Well, I think intentional leadership really embraces a few versions of leadership, and one big one for me is emotional intelligence. I think that when you lead, you have to understand who you're leading, where you're leading at, where you're leading them to. You know, there's just so many little nuances that you really have to understand in order to be able to lead. And I think with organizations, nonprofits, small nonprofits, we have a tendency to try to play to the dollar. And you really can't do that, because then you kind of lose your authenticity. So you really have to understand your organization. You can't have all the money. You know, sometimes you just have to let it go. You can't make it fit what you're trying to do. And I think your donors and your community kind of know when you understand who you are serving. People get that. And so I think that the major thing is understanding who you're serving, understand who you are as a leader. And I think just that really emotional leadership piece kind of covers everything. What do you think, Victoria?
Well, emotional leadership actually, you know, yes, it covers those also, what I call the generic leadership qualities. Digging deeper a little bit in the nonprofit sector, what I've seen, because there is such a divide between the board of directors and the staff, and it's not necessarily a negative divide, it's how the governance organizational structure is maintained to keep it as a community service organization or organization that is about community, that many leaders that come on board come on for, I'll just say, the wrong reason. I was laughing, I was writing some stuff and was laughing or chuckling to myself because someone was so proud when they explained to me, I'm on 16 boards. I was like, oh, my goodness. You know, I was like, so really what can you contribute? You know, what is the meaning of being on 16 boards? And when I look at people that really want to take on a leadership role on a board, there's no way they could possibly serve 16 organizations effectively or give them some value. There's just not enough time in the day because each organization needs much more than just what I call a drop-in board member. You know, they show up for a meeting and then you don't see them until the next meeting. There's things that should be happening intentionally between the meetings that they are a true advocate and steward of that organization. And that's why in intentional leadership, when we talk about it in board-bound training, we define the difference between being a manager, a leader, or whether or not you're a servant leader or a steward leader. And it's really valuable to understand who you are, and nonprofits, they all need that steward leadership because that's the package that they must sort of be able to deliver on to lead the organization forward, growth, whatever it is their goals are. And also you mentioned understanding who you're working with. Organizations need to understand where are you in the maturity level? What are your real needs? And I'm glad you said it. Money always isn't it. That is what you use to get what your goals should be, but sometimes you just need to get your name out there. You need to be working on awareness, you know, and things like that. So all
you know,
underneath. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I guess I'm going to throw another term out there, connected leadership, you know. I mean, I think steward leadership, emotionally intelligent leadership, all those, they really kind of overlap in a lot of ways. But connected mm-hmm. leadership, because I oversaw a huge budget for a financial institution, and I oversaw their giving dollar. And I would say that the majority, I'd say 90% of the people who made the ask for money didn't know what we gave money to, and we were very clear about that on our website and everything because they just figured that they, one, they either knew somebody who was involved or worked for the company that was high up. I used to get so crazy when I call them the guys, and, you know, in the financial field a lot of times that's what it is, unfortunately. But they would just kind of send me an email, hey, so-and-so is going to call. Well, I didn't, and look, it didn't take a lot for me to figure out that meant give them something, which I just hated mm-hmm. because it didn't align, you know. And
right.
So I think that definitely connected leadership, know who you're leading, understand your own organization. When you come in as a new board member or chair or whatever, you know, really understand your organization so that if somebody did ask you, what have you given to in the last 5 years? You can answer that question very clearly. Who do you give to, you know? Before you approach somebody, you kind of want to take in some knowledge with you. It's very impressive. I mean, like I said, I sat over a huge budget, and I was just – I loved it when somebody came in and they understood what we did. A lot of financial literacy for kids and stuff like that. But it makes a huge – difference because everybody's got a purge. And when you purge, you have levels. You're going to purge out the ones that just didn't even get it, sent it in a raggedy-looking old piece of paper that they found, right? And then you have the next level of people who just...
Oh, you mean on the paper bag?
Yeah, exactly. You're going to get rid of that level of people who didn't even really understand who you are or spelled the president's name wrong or my name wrong or whatever, you know, didn't do their research. And you just kind of have this system. And I think it's important for nonprofits to have that system in place and make it known because it works both ways. I'm not just trying to get on a board. I want to get on a board that fits my need in terms of my purposeful need in life. What do I want to do? That's the one I want to get on. So I got some questions, too. But nonprofits don't think like that. Oh, my God. They are not going to say anything that's going to cost them $5. Now, I'm just being real, okay?
And another point, I mean, to piggyback on what you're saying, that there's a level of responsibility on both sides. You were talking about making sure that as a leader, when you go to get on a board, that it's aligned with your own purpose. But that board, that nonprofit also needs to know that, you know, you're supposed to be recruiting members for your board. Do your background research, too. Make sure that they're a good fit and that they actually are what you need. Don't assume, and I love this when Linda Lysakowski mentioned it at a training, don't assume that just because you have a financial person coming on your board that they want to be involved in finances. They might be coming onto your board because of the cause and want to have a completely different role in their leadership. Also, isn't it possible that you as an organization can really build your leadership? Don't anticipate or just assume that they're going to come with all of these extraordinary skills and talents and experience. You might have someone that's really, really dedicated that will work day and night but just needs some training. So make sure you as an organization provide them with the tools. And part of that training, blowing and waving our flag again, is board-bound leadership training.
Check this out, Victoria.
Go ahead.
Because if I don't say it right now, I know I'll completely forget. But, you know, sometimes, this is what happened. I was, I'm going to be president of an organization, so I'm kind of looking around at folks and everything that who could really help me, because I got a part of this is really building the organization as well as leading the organization. And I went to somebody, and I was almost threatening them. Okay, so you got to be on my board, because I need. And then he said to me, well, do you want a lame duck, a name, or do you want somebody who's going to roll up their sleeves and really help your organization grow? And I thought, wow, okay. In this day and age, we can't look for that same old board seat person. We got to look at who's going to really come in and embrace, enhance, make better, do better, be committed. That's the person we're looking to serve on our board. It's not those times when you wanted the head of the company who's probably, and I love them all, I was one of those people, who's probably not going to be able to show up that often, where you have this other person who works for the same company. No, they don't oversee the giving dollar, but guess what? They can talk real highly of you and probably get you where you want to be in that financial relationship quicker than that leader will.
Mm-hmm. And also there's roles and places for the leader. And we've had this conversation of creating that advisory council. They don't necessarily have to be on the board. You know, there's roles and responsibilities, but there's also a great fit on an advisory council. If you just need that name recognition, and many times those high-level executives, the presidents and things like that, prefer to be on an advisory council where their obligation might be to come together twice a year to answer some questions, give feedback back on some strategic plans or thoughts and ideas for the future, and then walk away. You know, so the organizational structure, you as the leader on a board, could really use your influence to help create a dynamic structure that really works for your organization. But going back to what you said earlier, you have to know what your organization is, what culture you're working in, what environment do you need, where you are as an organization. Yeah, go ahead.
I hope that people are really listening to this part, because this is probably where a lot of stuff falls in part internally and externally, is when your board does not match itself. It doesn't really match the needs of your nonprofit. Sometimes, like I said, you almost have to purge and say, okay, I'm going to get rid of all these lame duck leaders and move them on to an emeritus or a whatever you want to call it. And they're still honored. And when people go on your website and they look at who's on the board, because that's what they do, then they see all these, you know, emeritus people, and then the roll up the sleeve people, that's the board members, and you know, some really great advisory board or something like that. And so I think that when nonprofits are first coming together, they think, oh, I need a board. Even at that moment, because nobody's chasing you, put together a board that makes sense, where you've interviewed, they've interviewed you, you make sure that they agree with what's going on, because if you're not aligned with the goals and objectives of the nonprofit board member, how in the world are you going to be able to serve our need? But we're afraid to rock the boat. Oh, my goodness, I don't want to say what I want because it might not match what they want, and now I lose them.
But they also have to, there's a flip side to that coin, which sometimes catches their attention even more. Okay, the founders, or if you're the visionary of this board, you have a goal, you have this mission and vision. And I'm assuming that you want that mission and vision to be here forever, that you're creating this legacy, that you are creating a sustainable organization. If you don't take the time and energy to really vet your potential board members and not just take a living body because they're breathing, but if you're not asking them and really exploring whether or not their thoughts and vision are in alignment with yours, these board members can come on your board and vote your vision into non-existence. Just think about that. Board members have the control to change the mission and vision of what the organization is about.
Mm-hmm.
So it's critical that you really take the time to understand who you're talking to and whether or not they understand your vision and are committed to it, and that's important. They might be coming on there with a hidden agenda that they say, oh, this organization does this really well. I would really like to see them do this, which might be totally off target, non-mission driven, and their goal is to make the organization into something else. And I have seen that happen time and time again, and the founders have come to me, what can I do? And I, you know, what did you put in your bylaws? You know, it
there you go.
They have that power.
That B word.
Nonprofit.
There you go. You
yes.
got it. I'm telling you. See, I mean, I want our listeners to be able to connect the dots. This is important because guess what? You also did with the IRS with your 501c3. You stated what you were going to do, and now you got your new whoever trying to change that, and they probably don't even realize you really just can't do that like presto change-o. So, yeah, you know, the knowledge thing is full circle. It's full circle. It's, like you said, continuous process. It just keeps going around and around, and it just, you know, how to – I don't know, that's something that for the next expo or the board-bound training or whatever that you really need to have people understand. That's the nucleus. Hello?
Yes.
That's the nucleus.
Building, you know, having that strong foundation. And I guess that's why I was so driven to do this whole board-bound leadership. And yes, it's called bound. And some people, well, that's for new members. No, this is setting a foundation. Board-bound people, I've seen them, have been on boards 5, 10 years and still don't understand what their role and responsibilities are. And that's sort of sad, but because the organization has made it by, you know, we get by, which I hate when they take that, I'll call it lackluster attitude. You should be excelling, succeeding, exponential growth, you know. But
Yeah, that's, I mean,
term,
you know.
we make it, you know, we get by, okay.
Yeah, no, we're not going there. We're going to be all about the reinvention. Now, it may not be a reinvention in terms of your logo's different, or, you know, the number of this or that is different, or, you know, it's just about what you believe that you need as you assess your organization. You know, it's all about reflection on what worked, what didn't work, lessons learned. I say you spread all that stuff out and you intentionally look at it with the intentional purpose of gleaning something that you can intentionally use to change or move your organization forward in a positive manner. Now, I know, Victoria, you've got some other things on our intentional list. Do you want to talk about those?
Well, yeah, and I was just, because many times the internal organization doesn't understand who they are, and we're sort of segueing into intentional marketing. I know that's another one of your areas of expertise, but it's an area that I've been really devoting a lot of time on because I saw such gaps in how the nonprofits were marketing themselves, and a lot of it is because nonprofits have to focus on two different marketing aspects. What their programs are, that is, so they have to market and say, this is our cause and this is what we do. But then they have to flip and talk a totally different language when they're trying to market to supporters. And then many times they don't see the difference or understand that. Or, once again, they stay in the, oh, we've always done it this way. Marketing has changed in the last, I want to say, 5 years. Most people will say 10. In the last 5 years, we've seen such an evolution of marketing strategies and how you should be approaching people. Even you and I, you know, we're talking about, you know, you got to have videos. You got to be seen. You got to be live. That wasn't around.
Victoria, 5 years? Yesterday, this morning, something changed. Trust me. I mean, you know, we both deal in our old-fashioned ways. We tinker in our Facebooks and things like that. But, you know, we don't really know that much. You know, we learned recently about Pinterest. I was like, oh, okay. And I thought I was doing pretty good. And so, you know, all of this and above, you know, and intentional marketing, I think that is least used by nonprofits because nonprofits don't know how to ask for what they want, as do a lot of salespeople, business people, things like that. So, you know, we're not alone. But with nonprofits, we don't know how to ask, where to ask, who to ask. Should it be on paper? Should it be a graphic by email? Should it be in public? Should we hold an event? I mean, you're constantly questioning these things. And guess what we end up doing, Victoria? We end up doing the same old, because we didn't come up with something that we thought could compete with the same old, same old. It's time to come up. 2017 is about reflection and change, lessons learned. So, Victoria, I mean, come on now. Like, what are you going to be, are you thinking about in terms of intentionally marketing the philanthropreneur?
Well, actually, I mean, I already got some things in the works. In 2017, in fact, hopefully my fingers are crossed and everything else on my body right now, our new website will launch this month, January 2017.
Yay.
And the reason we're reinventing our website, well, there's a couple reasons. And I'm going to be very authentic here. First of all, we're a small nonprofit led by a minority woman, but this huge, big corporate bully, I'm going to put it out there, is coming after us about our name. They say it's too close, not is their name. It's too close to their name. And so we, over the last 6 months, have been working with a lawyer, and he has dug in his heels, and he's telling me, no, you are not going to change. You own it. This is you. You have it, and you are not crossing over into those muddy waters that they think you are. And so he wanted me to really make sure that the Philanthropreneur Foundation is making a statement. And so we're going to come out with a new website that's bolder, brighter, not corporate at all. It will be interactive, fun. It will have videos and a lot of things. I was trying to stay very mainstream on the first version. It's going to be a totally different website. Some of the same old features, but a lot of new features will be coming on that website. So I'm really excited about it because it's an intentional statement of who we are as an organization. And that also leads into some of the programs that we are either dropping or really going to boost. Our nonprofit awareness expo was a surprise success, let's put it that way. Even though the need, I saw the need there, it was not until what I'll call a marketing mistake that brought to light what really was appealing to our target audience. And target audience and all of these words are important for you, the nonprofit, to understand. If you don't know who your target audience is, how are you ever going to write the right message for them? And so it helped us, you know, by just changing the name. Our core value, or my core value, I hate to say my core value, it was learning. Most people don't care about learning. They want to be seen through expo and awareness. And so that's why we switched the name to Nonprofit Awareness Expo. Even though I had the Nonprofit Awareness Day tied to our conference, it wasn't catching the attention. When we switched it to Awareness Expo, it was like it exponentially exploded. So it's just interesting. Go ahead.
It's so important that nonprofits understand it's okay to be vibrant. I think that sometimes you think that you can't be vibrant and have the appearance of success and happiness in your goals or whatever because you're a nonprofit and you represent whatever it is. You know, unfortunately, there's probably more sad nonprofits that deal in sad things than very happy things. But either way, I think that me as a donor to your nonprofit, I want to see hope, not hopelessness. I want to see that this organization is out there and it's happy that it's affecting change, whether it's one person, two dogs, whatever it is. So I think that the vibrancy, like you're talking about, applying to the philanthropreneur is very important because we're a nonprofit for nonprofits. So we want to show our constituents, our customer, that we're making positive changes. And I think the look and feel speaks very much to that. But nonprofits, again, this is an advent, okay? This is a horizon, and we're now crossing over into the different, the new nonprofit, the change agent nonprofit, the nonprofit that gets itself and understands who it is, the nonprofit that each one of their employees can actually state what they're about, what that company's purpose is. That's just not what happens usually. I'm sure we could walk into any nonprofit right today and ask the receptionist or ask somebody, no offense to anybody, but they would not really fully understand what their purpose is. So important.
Absolutely.
Education, you know.
Yeah, and I was talking about that this morning because, we're putting together the Board Bound Leadership book. To coincide or align, but can be bought separately, about the whole emphasis of what is board-bound leadership. I was writing today about, building a philanthropic culture. That, as you said, the receptionist, the custodian, everyone associated with your organization should know what you're about, what your goals are, what your needs are, and what your successes and impact look like. Donors and supporters don't support stress. And I it was interesting. I heard it in that term that when nonprofits come out, oh my God, if we don't do this and this, you know, we won't keep our doors open. That's stress. Nobody wants to support stress. They want to support success. Everybody loves the winner. Just look at the teams and football. You know. You know, you have your excuse me, rainy day fans that if you're winning, they're with you, but if you're losing, they're on to somebody else. The exact same thing happened with
it's
donors.
It's so much easier to be positive for your organization, even if you're presenting bad news. It can be presented in a positive way. Oh, you know, we didn't meet our numbers this month, but we have 3 new volunteers. I mean, I think originality, thought process into every word that's being crafted and used in whatever way for a nonprofit is important. The days of just because you're representing, you know, animals with very unusual diseases or whatever, that's not sustainable as the purpose of that organization. You know what I mean? And I think that there's a bigger picture. I would give homework that would be every organization, even though you think you know who you are, paint the picture of who you are. Write it out. Because then you got to think about it, and then you realize it pretty instantly that you don't know anything.
And that's important in some of the initial steps of your marketing. Under the marketing umbrella comes branding. And many organizations, they don't even think about their whole brand. What is it that they are represented? And it's interesting, especially with a lot of startups. They'll talk, oh, well, I can go get a Facebook page. Okay, that's your backup, but when you have to create your own website, you have to go through the mental process, the intentional development. I'm going to throw that word intentional. Mm-hmm. Of who you are as an organization. So what color themes fit who you are? What should your logo look like? What is your message, your tagline? You should have a mission statement that your board has developed, but is it really serving what you do? Is it 2 paragraphs long where nobody will remember it, or is that what I call that one breath statement that is strong and impactful? All of that comes into your branded message, but also when you have a great branded message where you have your own website with its own name, you have just exponentially increased your credibility with those that are looking at you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That word.
Money.
Yeah. That word credibility is so key, because that's the first thing I look for. My son was just doing something recently, and you know he's coming back and giving me the info. I'm asking questions, and I finally said, well, just you know, send me the website link. He said, oh, it doesn't have a website. I was like, okay, well, then I can answer that pretty easily. No, because, you know, yeah, you have to have all of that and more, and you want your organization to you want to eliminate any of the negative right up front by having the minimum stuff you should have. This is why, look, Victoria, again, board-bound leadership is college. What you're going to get in that program, all the things we just talked about, the little stuff, the big stuff, connecting of the dots, that's what you get when you go through board-bound leadership program. I think that it's just the nuances, because I know I've been on a lot of boards. You've been on a lot of boards. How many of them, almost in retrospect, you think, oh, my gosh, they didn't have none of that stuff that I now know that a board should have. But I survived, yes, but, ooh, I'm almost feeling lucky that I did. And, you know, we don't want people to have to even think about that. Go in educated. Go in engaged. Go in understanding what it is that you want to get out of these. This is not an experience for them. This is not for you to go in and save the day. This is about an experience for you. You're fulfilling a passion and a purpose. You know, and sometimes I think people that have board seats forget that that's their connection, that they do have a reason for being at that table, you know, and then ... there's a whole bunch of other stuff. But I think that, you know, just getting to know who you are in that environment, again, back to the emotional leadership and all of that, who are you in that environment, will get you where you really need to be in terms of the knowledge base, don't you think?
Absolutely, and I think if you just go through what I call the marketing process, developing your marketing package, even some people call it a media kit, which is a little bit different, but your marketing package of your message, your brand, and all of the elements that you need, which is a branded web page. This is the internet and technology era. Not having a web page, like you said, that's the first place we do. We Google you to find your web page. If you don't have one, you're checked off the list. No one even explores or tries to find you beyond that. And I'm not going to say it's unfortunate, but it's a reality that you need to understand that now. I just recently people send me emails where they have their website as their name, you know, a part of their email. I take that name and go and try to find it. And if I find that the website non-existent or website not found or not available, I don't even respond to the email. And that's how deep this can get. Even if you're using a branded email, people, especially if you're trying to introduce them to something, they will vet you before they respond to you.
And you know why? Because there's crazy people out there, Victoria, because you don't know who you're really getting stuff from. That's the first reason that you want to check that out and make sure. I got to find your name there, your picture, and you know, the picture got to look real, and, you know, the logo has to look like somebody, like your kid didn't make it. I mean, it's just like a whole lot of criteria that in our desperation as small nonprofits, either to get the nonprofit set up, to build a nonprofit board, to get funding for the nonprofit, whatever it is, we're going to, our brain naturally, now I'm not a psychologist, but I'm thinking our brain naturally wants to just say, well, I mean, that's not so bad that they don't have their picture on there. I mean, because we want it.
Yeah, but I guess let's say there's a few key things that you are fundamental that you can't scrimp on. Going back to intentional leadership, making sure you have the right people on the bus. I'm quoting Jim Collins again. And that means first understanding who you are and what you need, taking time to ask them and find out if that is their interest. And then the same thing with marketing. You must have the basic elements of what are called best practices in marketing. Solid branding message and a place for them to find you, which is not social media. Social media is the backup system and the second level of reaching your constituents, but you have to have that professional presence, that branded, we own this site, which is your brochure, and you're not what's called third-party advertising. Whenever you're on Pinterest or Facebook, you're a third-party subscriber or, you know, presenter. When you own your website, that's who you are. You're coming as the first primary resource of what people are looking for. It is your brochure. So, and then we're going to get to one last item. Do you have anything else to add for marketing? Because I'm going to go to intentional programs.
No, I just think that, you know, you have to realize that even with all of that, that, you know, look, you got to be changing. You got to have pictures of, you know, at least once a week, something new for them to go look at on your site. I mean, that's just a part of how it is these days. So, anyway.
Yeah, and an easy way to do that is use the tools that are out there. There's like if you write a blog, it will post it to the social media sites as soon as you make it go live and publish it. So making sure that your tools have all of the capacity to do what you need. So many people get so scared, oh, it takes so much time to do all that. No, you set them up and then you create just a plan. You know, you can even do all of your posting on within 2 hours on one day for the entire month if you have if you're using sites like Hootsuite or Buffer or all of those interactive where they are social media software platforms to help disseminate what you're saying. Most of them have it. So, just, I guess what we're constantly repeating here is be intentional about the thought process of putting together your leadership, putting together your marketing, whether or not you are planning on being one of those leaders. What are your personal intentions to do it? So intentions and being intentional to things to be the common thread that we're running here. So here you are, you have this cause, which for so many years they thought, oh, all we need is the cause, people will come, you know, the old saying, we build it and they shall come. That's not happening anymore. And the reason I put intentional programs on this list is that, once again, within the last 30 days, I've had at least 5 people come up to me and talk about, oh, their idea and this and that. But they were old ideas. They were impacted by a cause that's been out there forever. But they didn't have anything to me that they were saying that was unique as to why they should create a nonprofit. So is your program really an intentional program that's unique, that you can say why you're different than the other 12,000 nonprofits that are doing the same thing out there?
Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's program- when I was saying that, if a nonprofit sat down or somebody wanting to start one sat down and just really drafted out their vision for it, how does it look? Why is it needed? Just a really just quick down and dirty that's just a really quick approach to, is this going to work? Now, it might not work in that particular way, that version, but, you know, you keep tweaking it till it really fits a need. Because that's the thing that I think, too, a lot of nonprofits miss, is that they haven't done probably that full business plan where they really have looked at their market research and to see that, is there somebody already serving that need? What capacity? How do I fit into the big picture? Two of you can't exist in this much square mileage, you know what I'm saying? So, like, a lot of little things that if a nonprofit just stopped and looked at on the front end, especially in a reinvention process, they could really do themselves a service and better see those things that they need to really focus in on.
Yeah, and I love the word focus in on. Sometimes it's better to have a very narrow focus of what you do and who you serve than trying to be the be-all and everything to everybody. And that's where your programs get watered down. And I guess that's the meaning of intentional programs, that it's not necessary for you to even think about the bigger picture at some point, but are you serving that very hardcore need that really drew you into the sector in the first place? There is a need for the small and mid-sized nonprofits. Because some of these big ones, what I call the Fortune 500 nonprofits, they don't have the capacity to reach down to the constituents that you can serve.
Oh, that's so key, what you just said, the capacity. Capacity works both ways, you know?
Yes.
And I think a lot of times that people with these big ideas and great ideas, but they have not focused in on what they can actually, where they can really affect a change, a useful, an impactful change. And so I think that's really key to point out about capacity. Sometimes you're just too big to do the small stuff and too small to do the big stuff.
Yep. And if you think about it, that's how the whole nonprofit sector was created. The government realized there were certain areas that, first of all, they didn't even want to delve into. They didn't want to make it a part of their programming. And so, therefore, what nonprofits do is they serve the public, the community, where the government does not. And that's why you get these the 501c3 exempt status, because you have to identify what is your purpose. Okay, those are purposes that the government will not put its hands into. They don't want to start making it one of their programs. They will support you to accomplish and serve the community, because that's what government's there for, but they don't want to be the service provider. And so that's what nonprofits do. You fill a gap in for the government as a non, and some people call it an NGO, non-government organization. And I don't know how many people understand, you know, the background of how it evolved and what your role in society is, but you're providing programs that other people can't. Big, big nonprofits, they, like I said, they don't want to reach down because they understand their role is in the global vision.
Mm-hmm.
Your role, excuse me, is to serve those within your reach. Think of it as the low-hanging fruit, especially if you're just creating a new program. What is the easiest path for you to get started? Do that first.
Wow.
Make it and then grow upon it. Build the
I think step. That's so, so important. I mean, you know, a lot of times when your need is globally, you know, produced, it just doesn't work out because you can't serve that. Now, I've known people that have organizations that serve a global need, but they went over to Nicaragua or whatever and started that organization and grew it out from there. You have to grow out from somewhere. And it's best if you just really focus in and really know that little area that you're serving around in your neighborhood or your town and just get to know that and feel that need greatly, because some things are just plug and play. You invent it over here and it works in Pattstown, New Jersey, and in Pattstown, because it's just a model that works. And I think that when we think about creating a nonprofit or maybe even a business, we think in terms of that template view, you know, like how does this lay over everything? Well, no. How does it lay over your space? And once you do a nice little plan and you look at that market research, you're going to understand better, okay, this is what I'm feeling and fitting right here. But a lot of nonprofits, you know, don't go through that process.
Yeah, and there's
a
great example out there of this. You and I both know him quite well, Silo, with his Serving Hope LV.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, he started, as he said, with a pot of spaghetti, just to serve this one little area of people who needed something to eat. And from that one pot of spaghetti, and that has been his only focus, you know, just that one serving on that one night, he has served over 65,000. And people, you know.
And he's a good example, too, because he could easily, right now, just blow that thing up, you know. And I think there's a lot of resistance to that, and thank goodness. But, you know, because it serves that global need. It's an effective global template, you know. But yet he stays right here, and that thing grows on its own out of that space and then is moved to accommodate the new version. You know, not a big old leap like a lot of us would take. Not a big, now we're doing it at the fairgrounds, you know. No. He just, we got to have him back on the show for 2017.
I'll say he's intentionally taking baby steps so that every level is so strong that he doesn't have to worry about it once he takes the next step.
I like it. Intentional is the word today, people. Intentional everything. Yes.
Yeah, so let's make that the word of the day, intentional, and to infuse it into every step that you take. I'll make this a short goal for the next 30 days. Make sure every decision and step you make that you have intentionally thought through the process before you make the decision. And let's leave out the spur of the moment or, you know, last-minute decisions, but give your time to think through things to make solid, intentional decision-making strategies as you move forward. I want you to think about making in leadership, marketing and your program. Just look at those three areas first, and we'll get to all the other stuff. But I think this has been a great conversation. I'm sorry nobody called in with their own questions because we really could have helped them.
Absolutely. We have to figure that one out. I think as we grow visual, I think that'll be helpful as well. And so we have a lot of exciting things that we can discuss on our next show about some things regarding the philanthropreneur and my thing. And of course, you know, what email do people use, Victor, if they want to send in a show idea or they have like today we just kind of picked a topic and we worked it every which way that the listeners could maybe send in some ideas for topics.
Okay, we have a couple of them. support@tcclv.org. They can always email them to me at bboys@tcclv.org. On our website, there'll be a contact button that they can send us questions and they'll get feedback on. And even on our website currently, that's the one that hasn't switched over yet, there's a radio show page where they can even apply to be guests and ask questions. So, or they can find us on Facebook. I'll just give them all of the outlets. Post a question on our Facebook page. That's the Philanthropreneur Foundation. So there's many, many ways to communicate and reach us. I'm on Facebook independently, on LinkedIn. So is Pat. So you can find us. Or you can send us a message through blogtalkradio.com/philanthropreneur. Oh my goodness, we have a lot of ways to let you connect with us, and we hope that you do. Any last words for us, Pat?
No, I really just want, I would love to see people sending in questions, topics. You can be on the show. I know Victoria and I talk a lot, but we will actually make space for you to ask your questions and things like that. But, yeah, absolutely reach out to us. And, you know, I think you'll see the show emerging in a little bit different fashion, just like Victoria talked about with the website as well. So just stay tuned and I think we'll have some really nice surprises for you.
Great. I'm looking forward to 2016. There I am. Okay, 2017. We're here.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Trust me, audience. We know where we're at. We know where we're at.
Yeah, sometimes the brain doesn't kick in quite as fast as it needs to. But, you know, I'm sure people are still writing 2016 on their checks, for those of you who are still doing checks. But,
exactly. Okay. Is she going to just qualify that or disclaimer that? Yeah, the people that are still writing checks. But it started off a great year. You're absolutely right. Great show, 2017.
And we're going to make it even better. Hopefully we can help all of you out there that have questions. Make sure you send in the questions like we recommended. So as we end another great show, this is Victoria Boyd, founder of the Philanthropreneur Foundation and Boyd Found Leadership, and Pat Landecker, founder of Ruby Red Slipper Project and Synergy Coaching. And we
see
are also proud
time.
That's right. We're so proud to bring valuable tips, resources, and information, plus answer any of your questions. So, in the meantime, we ask, are you a philanthropist?
Thank you for tuning in to the Philanthropreneur Radio Show, hosted by Dr. Victoria Boyd and Pat Landecker. Get involved. Follow us on Facebook and other social media outlets. If you wish to share comments or suggestions or appear as a guest on our show, visit www.philanthropreneurfoundation.org. To contact us, email support@pcclv.org. The Philanthropreneur Radio Show is a production of and sponsored by the Philanthropreneur Foundation, a 501c3 tax-deductible organization.